Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
You're listening to Friends from Work.
All right, welcome back to a highly anticipated episode here of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Multiverse, hosted by yours truly, Kyle Sconewell, and world's sexiest man, my co-host, Robbie Earle. I mean, look at him today, people. The glasses, the haircut, the shirt. It's the whole package.
I mean, look, you know, it's summer. So I wore my sunscreen colored shirt. Is that a Deadpool joke? Does that work?
I don't think so. No, that wasn't it. All right, let's take it again from the top. I'm just kidding. How are you today on this Deadpool day?
It's here. I feel like our loyal listeners have waited patiently for not really just the X-Men era, but kind of since we started the podcast. I think there's been a contingent of folks that have been really curious to see how you would react to Deadpool. And I have gotten progressively more curious as well, because we've now talked about so many different kinds of movies, especially with Screensaver. And I think that, so you and I have not talked at all about this movie, about your impression. I didn't even know when you watched it. So but just before we get into it, I do think that you're more nuanced when it comes to these things than certain people might expect. Like, I know a lot of people think that you would have a very specific reaction to Deadpool, and that could be the case. But I really like the more we've gone on this journey together, I don't know. I think you're kind of a wild card. So totally. I'm genuinely fascinated to see what this conversation looks like.
I don't know totally where that comes from. Do you? Like, I did say that this wasn't totally my thing, but I didn't ever say I hate Ryan Reynolds. I didn't say, like, what people don't understand about me is, if it doesn't become one of my things in the moment, it doesn't mean that I hate it. It just means, like, I didn't value it enough at the time for it to make my priority list. But then I went about my life. I didn't trash Deadpool on, I don't know. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about it too. I also got to say, I had an adventure even just watching it last night. As you can see, if you're watching, I'm in a hotel room in Davenport, Iowa. Shout out Iowa. Shout out Quad Cities. Quad Cities. But I was mid watching it and kind of live posting on Discord, and a tornado warning came through and I lost my internet. So I had to pause right from the scene that he goes to the giant boat to take on Ajax, I think.
And oh, wow.
The three of them are lined up.
Like the climax.
Yep. Yep, and I lost internet, so I paused for like an hour, actually edited one of our other episodes, and then jumped back in. So it was even a journey getting here, but I'm here, and I want to say happy 4th of July to everyone, and we're doing it. Okay, so here we go, Robbie. Deadpool 2016. By the way, did you rewatch it too?
I did, yep.
Okay.
I got to rewatch it, and I got to really focus, although, you know, it's funny, I'm curious to hear your thoughts again. I had a decent amount of notes for our Daredevil rewatch the 2003 movie that came out on Friends from Work Plus this past week.
Oh, boy.
I had zero notes for Deadpool. I mean, like, there were a couple things that struck me as I was watching that we'll probably get to. But I think that is always... it's telling because there are certain kinds of movies that fall into that space, and we can get into that in a bit. But yes, Deadpool 2016, directed by Tim Miller, who I believe directed the sequel as well, but is not coming back to direct the third film, was written by Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick, and they are returning to write Deadpool and Wolverine along with Zeb Wells, friend of the pod, who is a big comic writer within Marvel, but has also contributed quite a bit to a lot of the Phase 4 offerings from Marvel Studios, most notably She-Hulk, but he has apparently done a lot of stuff kind of ghostwriter-ish behind the scenes that he may or may not be credited for. He's he's kind of become a go-to guy for Feige, apparently, in terms of coming in and doing some cleanup work. So it almost reminds me of kind of the role that Marcus and McFeely had really early on, whenever they kind of came in late to clean up Thor the Dark World. There it is.
I don't think you heard me. I said ghost rider-ish is what I thought you said. Ghost rider-ish. Oh. He's doing a lot of ghost rider
work. No, with a T. Although, I mean, you know, we are in the middle of our Fox detour. So.
Good point.
Although, actually, I think that might be another Sony one, which is kind of crazy. But anyway, that's Deadpool. Here we go.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. For me, I think it was mostly what I thought it would be. I had more fun with it maybe than anticipated, and I think it's a good movie. Okay. I think it's a good movie. I realize that what I just said doesn't make for great podcast content because I'm not coming in here today with blazing hot takes. I liked it. I didn't love it, but I don't have anything that I really disliked. I liked it. So I know that's so boring. First of all, let me set the stage. It is really fun. It's really fun to watch movies that you've never seen. So like I said with Dark Phoenix, we're approaching the portion of these journeys where, like, I like rewatching stuff, but it's fun when you have no idea. So a lot of my live reactions were, oh, okay, he has cancer. Oh, that's how his skin got mutated. And we talked about that. Oh, there are a few X-Men tie-ins. Like, I get it now. And so that was a lot of fun. I know that's obvious, but we haven't had new content here for so long. So it's just fun to have new content. And this was a new content movie for me.
Well, and it is, I think I enjoyed it more kind of in the context of our X-Men watch, even though it is not super connected. There are a couple of fun, like the fact that he specifically within the film makes the Xavier or McAvoy joke.
Yeah.
I think works to kind of, again, this came out in real time right after Days of Future Past. We're watching it after Dark Phoenix. If you kind of combine this with our Friends from Work Plus rewatch, because I think that's technically where this should fall on the timeline. But I do think that the general journey through the X films has improved this a bit for me.
Well, I don't know if it's improved it, but I enjoyed it for sure. I wrote that line down. McAvoy or Stewart, these timelines are so confusing. I actually wrote down like 10 or 12 times that I chuckled to myself in my hotel room. So let me start with this. Not only was it fun to watch a new story, the action sequences are really top notch here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really cool. First of all, from a character design, I don't know anything about Deadpool, but I love the way they make him move. The ninja style stuff, the tasteful usage of slow motion. Like, for example, there's this unbelievably cool shot where he throws his sword through the motorcycle tire to stop the motorcycle. that stuff was awesome. I thought the opening action sequence just to kick off the movie was awesome. And by the way, so maybe this is where some people think like, oh, wait till Kyle sees this. To me, this is not a gratuitous level of violence. Like in the genre, everything really worked. There wasn't like a part that I was like, oh, I don't know where people think that comes from. There wasn't a part that I was like cringing at. I thought it was pretty cool. The 12 bullets thing was pretty dope.
Yeah.
Counting them down. And it is fun to have a character that within those action sequences operates with the swagger and just douchiness that he does. It's kind of different.
Right. Well, and like, I really love the suit design, like the way that his actual costume looks, like that it's an actual suit, you know, and he makes the joke about the Green Lantern, like, don't give me an animated suit.
Yeah.
But it grounds everything. It's kind of, you know, it's the reason I love when the MCU uses like physical, like, you know, Spider-Man takes off his mask rather than like having the nano stuff like come on and off. It grounds the whole thing. And for a character like this that never takes his mask off kind of on purpose, that does a ton of work with kind of bridging the gap between the action sequences and not. Mm-hmm. And I thought that opening scene, like I had the same reaction where even like to me, it was like I started off where this exceeded my expectations based on my memory of the movie, because the opening sequence was both really well done from an action mm-hmm. standpoint. And I thought that was, you know, it's really funny. Like those were some of the funnier jokes at the top. And then to me, it took it kind of going back into the flashbacks and him like telling his story for me to get back into some more of the scenes where I'm like, okay, yeah, it's a lot of the actual like story and some of the character writing apart from like the heavy Deadpool action sequences don't necessarily work quite as well for me, just because it's a lot of like shock humor.
Dude, that's like 1,000,000,000% what I felt for sure. Not just the shock humor, but okay, hold on. I want to stay on the positives. Let me come back. Let me circle back to a couple questions about the plot specifically and some of that writing. Action sequence is so good. You told me ahead of time that this film, from a comedy standpoint, was very much a volume shooter where he's going to throw out 10 jokes and how many of those work for you depend on your humor. Mm-hmm. I thought the movie was really funny. And in general, this is not typically my scene for humor. Really just for humor. It is my scene for action and plot. For humor, this is not typically my humor. There's all kinds of different kind of humor. We talked about how, like, you know, Ragnarok borderlines on a little goofy at times, whereas Iron Man 2, for example, and Justin Hammer's got some of the like satirical, really fast, like under your breath wit.
Right.
That would be more my scene than what this would be, which is like a shock humor thing. But I didn't realize that even within the shock humor, not every joke is a shock humor thing. And there were things that are really funny even within that. So not only did some of the shock humor jokes work, some of the non-shock humor jokes work. And I wrote down a ton of them. Like, when he tells the one guy, he's fat Gandalf, and he says, go cast a spell under his breath. Like that kind of thing got me laughing. He says, this place seems sanitary, as they're taking him into the like torture chamber, which by the way, had a really great like James Bond Casino Royale feel, which I loved. Just like ultimate swagger throughout like the worst possible stuff. Let me just throw some of these at you. Like, I love the wink and nod of the camera, the McAvoy or Stewart. These timelines are confusing. The you have something in your teeth thing worked pretty well for me. Like when he finally says like, thank you, by the way, you had something in your teeth. I laughed pretty hard at the very end when he raises the white flag and goes, hey, everyone, this guy's a douchebag. Like, you can follow me. And you know what? And he says something like, I'll even give you gentle, borderline lover-like treatment. Like, as he works his way down, like, I'll be kind, gentle, borderline. Mm-hmm. That was pretty funny to me. So there's a lot of stuff. Have fun at your midnight showing of Blade 2. to the people wearing all black. So you know what I mean? I would say I'm just in lockstep with you, where for every 10 jokes, I liked 3 or 4 of them, and I don't dislike the others. It's just not my humor. The masturbation jokes, not totally my humor. Like,
right. I just seem like
it's not that I'm offended by it. It's just, it seems low hanging fruit esque at times.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. I think like there are a lot of the TJ Miller jokes work for me, like the avocado line.
Yes. I said that
wrong with their relationship. And this is the only catharsis.
Just in general, when he reveals his face to his friend, that was funny. The whole thing. No, that's terrible.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. So here's what I'll say kind of on the humor point, because I know we've got a lot of other things to cover. I'm really curious now to get your take on Deadpool 2. I think they're seen as pretty lateral. Like, I don't know that people have very strong opinions in terms of one, you know, going downhill or going up.
Just overall, you mean?
Right. I generally do prefer the second one because I feel like it gets a little bit more into what I would think of as my style of humor, where it's goofier and more meta and a little less like masturbation jokes, which again, it's not like it's getting any cleaner or anything like that. Like, that's not really the issue. It's just like,
that's what I'm trying to say too. That's what I'm trying to say.
That's been like, I don't know if other people have a stronger take, but I thought that that's one of the reasons why the second one jumped up for me. So, you know, we can kind of circle back and have this conversation again then.
I guess what's fun is the intro sequence is a little closer to my humor in general, like the cab driver stuff. And just the fact that the cab driver is driving around this guy who's clearly got swords and like wearing a mask and how he doesn't want to sit in the back and he moves forward and then talking about his girlfriend, like all of that worked pretty well for me. So that it's not that he doesn't ever say anything quote inappropriate there. It's just, it seems a little more clever, which is just where, again, it's not wrong. It just leans a little more towards what I would in general like more. I did want to ask you about, so I think I'll say this, the other massive positive is that it's just fun. Like in the same way, and these are not the same movie, but in the same way that I praise Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania for just embracing making a fun movie, I don't think that this movie is necessarily like rewriting how to do origin stories. And it's not like there's a crazy twist or the plot is so well thought out. It's just that it's really fun. Like, I enjoyed watching it, going along for the ride, and the action sequences and humor played into that. Ryan Reynolds' charisma plays into that, but I just got to say that as my last note of, it's just a fun thing. I understand why people are into it, because it's just different and fun.
I love just how well done the movie is in general. I feel like any complaints here are really just preference. But for what they were, you know, we're always talking about evaluating things on their own terms. And when you compare this to a lot of the other kind of auxiliary superhero movies, whether we're talking like, you know, Aquaman or Venom or whatever, like these other fairly big franchises that have popped up over the last decade, like this is so far ahead. Like, as I was watching it, like, I really think that the only thing that even gets close to me in terms of recent quality would be MCU stuff, and maybe, I mean, Days of Future Past, as like the high watermark there. But in some ways, I even think, like, I think this is a tighter movie than that. And so it's like, it is, I'm really struck by just how, like for instance, there, like, that's a great example of Days of Future Past. It's just gonna kind of be more my thing genre wise. But I think when you're looking kind of like shot for shot execution, performances, like
But interesting comparison in general, though, because, you know, now we're getting on the whole, like, this is an origin story versus a film that's kind of the end game of the X-Men universe, trying to tie up all these things. So, like, obviously that's going to be more convoluted and longer because it has to do a lot more stuff, an ensemble film. But I think just to your original point, quality wise, that seems to be about the range. Like, I don't know what this has on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, I don't know what the perception is. I would say for me, this is like a, like a mid 70% that probably has a higher score than that because people probably prefer it slightly more than me. This would be like a 75% that would be higher in the critic score. Are you looking it up?
Yeah, I am looking it up.
It's going to get higher than 75, but just with my preferences, I'm going to.
It is 85.
Okay. Yeah. That makes total sense to me. So yeah, I think right there in lockstep with Days of Future Past in terms of quality, but yes, a very tight, just slick origin story. Okay.
Yeah.
I do want to ask you about the actual writing you were referencing in some of the flashback stuff and not only in the dialogue, but also just in the overarching plot, which I thought was good. Mm-hmm. Not great. Like, for example, did you ever watch this and think to yourself, like, I don't love being pulled out of a story and
like,
I thought
with all the flashbacks and stuff.
Well, how about like at the very end, his entire motivation for not talking to his like lover, like his girlfriend, his wife, essentially his fiance, I guess, is that. I don't know that I fully bought that he's so ashamed of his face that he can't even like call her or see her from a distance. I don't know that I fully like emotionally connected with the reveal at the end that they like worked it out that easily. I from a mm-hmm. disbelief standpoint, like being pulled out, I found myself asking questions like, doesn't she want to know anything about his superhero nature now? Like, not just his face and that she can sit on it, but like, can we talk at all about like the fact that he just destroyed everyone on this boat easily and he can't die and he heals and he can grow back limbs. Right. There was a little bit of, okay, she hasn't seen him in years and there's no questions there. Did you think that at all or not? Am I crazy?
No, I did think that because there's that scene specifically where she looks over at him and he's got like a dagger like sticking out of his temple.
Right.
And you would think,
how is she just accepting that immediately?
Right. Like you would think she would be worried that he would be dead or dying or something like that. But I mean, that's, I would say probably the weakest part of this entire movie for me. And I don't know. Yeah. I guess maybe just this movie is that dynamic between them. Like I think it works as a motivation for him, and I like that it kind of humanizes him, and it does give us some like really soft, like good moments, good character moments. But I just like the whole, like their whole back and forth, it doesn't really work for me. Like the Star Wars jokes, Empire, and it's like I'm just, it's just all a little like, I don't know. And so the thing at the end, it's never like the moments between them are never as hard hitting for me as I think they might have been.
Or they are for some people, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You can often just put words to it better than me, but I didn't have specifics like the Star Wars Empire thing. I wasn't specifically thinking that didn't work, but in general, I don't think I felt as much heart as I could have. Even like, here's an example. Some of the shock humor stuff feels very James Gunn-esque. And yet I do mm-hmm. think that James finds like one notch higher, not like amazing, but one notch higher in his ability to have those moments hit when they're supposed to, even when those are two directors, this movie and that one, that immediately ruin the moment with like a sexual joke or something. Like a dick joke.
Oh, right.
And yet, even with Gunn doing it in the same frequency that happens here, there are more moments I feel there for a split second than here. So there is something, I guess, with the chemistry that I don't know. Like I did, again, I bought it. I just didn't buy it to like a 10 out of 10 degree. I would say it's like a 75% movie. And part of that is like, even Deadpool, Wade waking up in the middle of the night crying from cancer. Like, I don't know that I felt it as much as I could have. That's all.
Yeah. I think
from an emotional standpoint.
Yeah. Part of it to me is I don't love, like, I don't know. It might be a casting thing. Like, she does a good job at certain moments, and at other moments it feels pretty wooden to me. But for what they were doing, I think it makes sense. But like, since that's kind of the driving, like the core of the movie, like if you compare it to something like if we're looking at origin stories, like the dynamic, the kind of banter between like Tony and Pepper in the first Iron Man movie, to me is that kind of like, because they're sort of doing a similar like really quick back and forth kind of over talking thing that,
right,
that
like they're on each other's level,
right. And there were moments in this movie, like I do like the competition about like who had the worst childhood. Like that was funny to me. And I liked that coming back at the end. So like it worked at times, but I just think, again, it goes back to like what you said at the very top, where it's another volume shooter aspect, I think, where it's like,
I thought the like sex jokes only then to lead to skee ball was pretty funny and kind of charming,
mm-hmm,
instead of going back to his room, you know? So like, yeah, I'm total lockstep with you. There were moments that worked. But overall, I wouldn't say it's even close to Tony and Pepper as far as chemistry goes. Like, even right. In Iron Man 2, that chemistry runs circles around this, I think. To the point where, like, when they finally kiss in Iron Man 2 on top of the roof, and again, the moment gets ruined by a roadie joke, everything about that I feel more. Like, I even mm-hmm. feel a little bit more emotionally connected when Drax, you know, puts his arm around Mantis and says, "You are beautiful on the inside." Even though he's ruining the moment, for a split second, I think I was a little more invested. Right. So there is something just that's not totally gotten me in yet, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be right back. I don't think I fully realized the extent that Hugh Jackman was going to be in this film, and I love it. Like, not only as a precursor to Deadpool and Wolverine, but just the fact that they already had a relationship and those shout outs. Like, the last mask reveal where he was wearing Hugh Jackman, right, made me laugh. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah. The smooth criminals down under.
Yeah.
At the beginning is good.
Yeah, pretty good. Just the flash through all the magazines, and it has the world's sexiest man, and it's not you. Uh-huh. It's Hugh Jackman. I thought that was pretty funny. I in general got really excited, even though now in hindsight there weren't many of them. I got excited about the X-Men tie-ins. Like, it was cool to see that jet. I kind of geeked out when I saw Xavier's school. I was like, oh, mm-hmm, it is going to be tied. Now, I understand they intentionally shy away from it, including a budget joke from Wade,
right,
which is pretty funny. But I thought that was all pretty cool, and how Colossus wants him to come be an X-Man, and I don't know. Uh-huh. And like, we can't afford more of them, so how come there's only two people at this mansion, you know?
Right. Did you like this version of Colossus as compared to the one that we got in the original trilogy?
Yeah. I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other, but I thought he was good. That was good. What did you think? Is that like a hot take that he?
No. I think so. One thing that, and I'm trying to remember if Colossus really showed up in X-Men 97. He shows up in the original show, but you know, he's a character that is very much defined by being Russian. Like, that's in the same way that like Nightcrawler is German, and they play into that a lot in the comics. It's the same way with Colossus, and so it was always just kind of weird the way that they handled that in the original trilogy, where he's just kind of this random like American teen, and he's not like, I mean, he's big, but he's not huge. So I kind of like, this felt like an opportunity for them to do with, I mean, to a much lesser degree, but to kind of do with Colossus what they're doing with Deadpool, which is try to do something that's very comic accurate. And I feel like they succeeded. Like, he's, you know, he's funny, but he's kind of good hearted, but he's super strong. It's like they make him feel unique in a way where, like, I like that that's the version that has kind of stuck. And I think he's showing up at least at the very beginning of Deadpool and Wolverine based on the trailer.
Which, by the way, this is a good time to quick give a shout out to the new TV spot that included Sabretooth. Did you see this?
Right. I did see that. I didn't want to tell you because I know sometimes you don't like to see those things as we get closer.
Yeah, but I saw it. Somehow I saw it. It was already revealed. But by the way, that guy, that actor, looks like he hasn't aged a second.
I know. Crazy.
Insane. Have you seen the comparison of his old getup versus the new one? Crazy.
No. But I mean, I just like, he looked like, sometimes you have people show up like that. Like, the Pyro guy has clearly aged, which is fair because he was pretty young in the original series. But yeah, it is crazy. It's been like 25 years.
Yeah. Unbelievable. It's got a little Paul Rudd in him. Yeah. Anyways, the main bad girl, Angel, is there any tie to the Angel we know? Is there any tie to the old X-Men stuff that she just got super strong? And then secondly, the other X-woman or man, that's the girl that's helping. Are we supposed to know her? Do we recognize her from a previous thing?
Not from a previous like movie at all. I think that they're both, like, they both have their root in X-Men comics. She came from like Negasonic Teenage Warhead came from Grant Morrison's new X-Men that we talked about a lot during the X-Men 97 coverage, which is also
that's her actual comics name.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, it's like intentionally over the top, but she also has the kind of yellow and black suit that Morrison's run brought back. So they, again, like, this movie is one that does a really good job of trying to give each character its due and pay off the source material.
Yeah. As a side note, by the way, I thought the power levels were really well handled. I thought everything about where they operated, all those characters, fit just right. Like, to actually see that Colossus could be hurt was good. I didn't think the teenage girl ever got like overpowered, and I felt like the combat between Deadpool and the bad guy felt like just the right amount.
Yeah, I agree. I like the way that they define the power sets between like Deadpool and Ajax, which is like, Ajax is, he's got these like crazy quick reflexes and doesn't feel pain, whereas like Deadpool does feel pain and doesn't necessarily really have any like additional physical attributes beyond just being like this, you know, highly skilled special forces guy that can now heal from anything. So it's like, well, they're kind of evenly matched.
He is enhanced a little bit because like they do a glimpse to him kind of getting super hearing for a second, a la Daredevil. And I really enjoyed that. Like, I geeked out a couple times because I had asked you on a previous episode, I was like, I don't even know if Deadpool has any kind of powers. And so I was kind of looking for it. There's a sequence somewhere, and please, listeners, help me now because I've only watched it one time. I thought there was a sequence where when he's getting his powers, all of a sudden you start hearing like all the well, you obviously hear like the whispers of people talking about him as he walks down the road. Before that too, I don't know. I thought I perceived that to be like he had a heightened senses. Oh.
Yeah, I don't know. I like, my take was always just that he's basically just got the healing ability. And but you
so
know,
when
I mean,
he's walking
I know
down the road and he's hearing all the people say it, he's just imagining that's what they're saying about him.
I think I always just took that to be like the people were not being very discreet and were like you could just hear what people were saying as he's walking by.
I don't think that's it, because some of them are like across the street and stuff and whispering it.
Maybe.
I mean, you know more. You know more about the character than me, so
I'm doing some research here.
Does Deadpool have heightened senses? I'm gonna look it up.
I think that there are scenes in the movie that could lead you to believe that. Although I think, like, for me, it's like I feel like he just kind of has that general, like.
Here's Reddit for us.
Oh, there you go. I think you can make an argument that he has like enhanced agility or strength, even if that's not like which I think you could then tie into the healing ability.
Right. But he obviously does, because even some of the flips and like jumping off the bridge, like, yes, he's also taking the hit and healing from it, but he obviously has a little bit heightened speed and awareness.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, you know, it's I think it's kind of in that same zone as Wolverine, where it's like, yes, but Wolverine's not like, he's not like the super strong or super fast guy. He's just kind of like, he's a notch above, you know, he's like somewhere in like the Captain America zone, maybe.
Just a notch above Toby, that guy. Office joke. It's funny, on Reddit, people are doing the exact same thing. They're having the same conversation we just had, which is, someone said, I decided to rewatch Deadpool 1, and they're talking about the scene where he has like this uncontrolled sense of enhanced hearing where he's hearing all the people on the street, blah, blah, blah. And then the top two Reddit comments are the two things we just said. Somebody says, I thought it was just like his like anxiety and imagination of what people were saying. Mm-hmm. And someone says it might be his inner thoughts. And some people were talking about it might just be that people weren't being super discreet. So that's kind of funny. So I guess maybe, I think you're right. He might not have a ton of heightened abilities, but I don't think I'm crazy to have somewhat perceived that during that sequence.
Yeah, I think it's probably telling. Like, if I knew less about the Deadpool character, then I probably would have had the same reaction. I think it's like, because I know the general power set that Deadpool is supposed to have, I wouldn't have like looked for that. But yeah, I do think in general, like, because of how stylized it is too, it's always going to be like, they're going to push the boundaries of what's like realistic, because it's like, you know, if he jumps from wherever, like, I guess, like, I don't know if he would have like broken some bones whenever he like falls down into the garbage truck or not. And I wonder like how often they're just kind of assuming that he can do whatever and like recover pretty instantly
when he's shattering his legs against Colossus.
Yeah. I like the, like, the one man hop. It's very, Monty Python.
Yeah. That is a Monty Python scene. I want to take a quick second to remind our listeners that we have two incredible partners here at Friends from Work, and two partners that are prepared for this Deadpool and Deadpool and Wolverine coverage in NerdRiot.shop and OrganicPriceBooks.com. And that's because Nerd Riot is going to get you all of the nerd merchandise that you need, all the Deadpool and Wolverine merchandise that you need, like a shirt like Robbie is wearing right now. NerdRiot.shop, use promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK. They have a great selection of stuff. And then Organic Price Books has all kinds of comics based on Deadpool stuff, any kind of stuff. If you want to go back to the old stuff, if you want to look through some of the new stuff, OrganicPriceBooks.com. You're going to get your best comic books at a cheap price, and you're going to be supporting a local company and not a massive supplier. So OrganicPriceBooks.com, use the promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK. Robbie, I don't have a ton more. I'll say I'm really excited to see Deadpool 2. You just told me this earlier. I have no idea if it is supposed to have taken a quality dip. I don't know the gauge of what the community thinks of 1 versus 2. Obviously, I need to see 2 as a setup for what's going to happen in Deadpool and Wolverine. And so I am very much anticipating that. I think I'm going to watch it a little bit later this week in preparation, which will be really fun. But overall, I had a good time. I'm intrigued to see where it goes. I liked doing the X-Men journey first to see some of the connectivity that we got. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of the like humor and plot things, I think, were kind of exactly what I was thinking. Some worked, some didn't work as well. Yeah. So I had a good time. Like I said, I'd probably give it a 7, 7.5 out of 10.
Yeah. No, I think that's about right. And
by the way, I didn't bring this up. The Deadpool track that plays, the dance track.
Oh,
like,
right. Dude, yeah.
That was legit funny to me. That was good.
Yeah. You know, I really liked that whole sequence of him kind of working his way through the chain to try to find Francis. And like it was just like there were some fun things there. And it was like, again, like I'm struck by how much the vast majority of like the Deadpool things, like those sequences, the action sequences and like the humor that's worked in there, like for whatever reason, those almost always work for me. And it's whenever it's like Reynolds out of costume bantering, those are still some really funny moments, but those are the ones that I think maybe work less often. And I'm not sure, maybe it's because like in the action sequences, they're not feeling the need to cover as much ground. Like, cause it's like in the, like there, you're kind of splitting your time between the comedy and the action. Whereas like in the other scenes, they really want like every line to be a joke. And so it's like if that's all you have is just dialogue with other characters, maybe that's where it hits me more strongly. But I did really like that sequence. And what I was going to say kind of relatedly is just the whole premise of this like shady organization that's like forcing people's bodies into like mutating, like finding these like recessive or latent genes and then selling those people to like basically as mercenaries. Like that's a good idea, you know, within like the X-Men universe. Like it kind of makes sense that somebody would try something like that. And so it all just it works within the X-Men context as kind of a new thing that hasn't ever really been explored in all the other movies. I think the first time I watched Deadpool way back, I thought that they were giving people powers. But I think the fact that they're actually just like they're activating people's mutant genes that maybe didn't activate the way that they should have or the way that they would have otherwise. Like just that whole thing works pretty well for me.
Couple of tiny notes in closing. I understand that Wade is supposed to be very like anxious, insecure about his facial features, like shallow-ish character. But did you find, and you just tell me, like, did you find the premise of him being so ashamed of his face a little bit far-fetched or a little too shallow? Like, again, coming back to my original premise of entirely ridding himself of this relationship that we were just told was like life-changing just because he's deformed. Like there's a little bit of that felt a little too shallow. Like even when she's about to die and everything's going down, he's concerned about his look. But I get it.
Yeah,
he's a superficial character. That's kind of the point. But I think
I think
that combined with I love the jokes. Like I would never just change the vibe. It like the whole reason he's gonna go like real intense with some of the shock stuff and the shallowness we're talking about is to be funny. Like it's setting it, like it is the genre. It's the genre. But do you also think when you watch it, like you could have used just like a breath longer of seriousness at times?
Oh, for sure.
Like I understand it's even more like this than Gunn, but there are times where like, again, at the end when he's revealing his face, where I'm like, if you just gave me literally 3 more seconds of seriousness without a joke or like during the cancer struggle, like when his girlfriend's talking to the doctor, I liked that. Like if I got like 3 more seconds of it instead of having to run away from it, which again, I understand is a genre and that's Wade as a character. He's wanting to kind of run away from it and joke about it to hide a larger anxiety. Right. But I guess what I'm saying is 2 things. That about the comedy, but then also if he's this character that's way insecure and overcompensating for hiding his anxiety, then I wish that was brought home a little bit more and that it wasn't just about his looks.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? How those are combined?
No. Yeah. Yeah. No, it does. And I do like, it's got a little bit of that. Like, I wish he would just communicate this. Like, it's like when you and I talk about those tropes where it's like someone's holding in information and things could just be, but maybe I think the trick is he thinks that he can change it back. And so I think if he knew from the start that he wasn't going to ever be able to change his face back to normal, I think he probably would have gone to Vanessa earlier and tried to explain like the new situation. But I think that since he's operating under the assumption that once he finds Francis, he can change his face back, he's maybe just, you know, wanting to hold off on the reveal.
That's a good point. That's a good word. I will slightly push back to that and say, it's a little bit dumb of him, as Francis even jokes, like to think that he could just reverse it and that Ajax would reverse it. Like, what could he possibly do to get him to make him do that? Seems a little naive, I guess. But
yeah.
I don't know. That's, I guess, I'm trying to put my finger on that last 25%. Like, what could have been landed to where I just really felt it? And like him finally revealing to his fiance just that it's his face. I don't know. I almost wish there was something more deformed then. It's not that horrific. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny. In our conversation with Joe Kelly last episode, which if you're listening to this and you didn't hear, I'd really encourage people to go back.
I need to go back. So I will.
He made a comment at one point about how, you know, he was so happy with the movie, which again adapts so much of what Joe brought to the character. But he made a joke about how they still, like, Ryan Reynolds is still just too good looking of a person. Like, whenever he's totally supposed to look that. Horrible.
Right. Like, if a comic writer wrote it to be, he's horrifically mutilated. But then Ryan Reynolds takes his like, when he's walking around with the hoodie on, I'm like, okay, he doesn't have a great face, but it doesn't look like a monster.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It's like, and I noticed that more this time, like especially certain scenes. And I get it. Like in the movie, they don't want you to constantly be distracted by it looking super grotesque. So they can use lighting in certain ways to where like they really draw your focus to it when you're supposed to think like, oh, wow, that looks terrible. But then they have tricks to make it not really at the forefront if that's not what they're trying to communicate in that scene.
Yeah.
And they want you just be able to watch Ryan Reynolds.
Who is jacked, by the way. I didn't realize that jacked.
Yeah. I think that I will say the character is so driven. And even looking back at that Joe Kelly run, I think one of the reasons he makes that joke is like the character's really, really self-conscious about his appearance. And so I think that here the Ryan Reynolds casting, because he is just like a good looking guy, like that it works really well because he looks so good at the beginning of the movie. Like to your point, he's super ripped and like just it kind of reveals, like I think it's supposed to reveal either like a vanity that the character maybe didn't even realize he had or like some level of like, underlying like anxiety that is kind of coming to the forefront because of this. Like, I think it's it makes for a good character arc in this first movie. And if I remember correctly, I feel like they leave, like that's not nearly the focus in the second one that it is here, which I like, not because it's like I don't want any of that, but because it does make it feel a little bit more linear in terms of the character's growth. I will also say I remember that movie having more like heart to it. Like I feel like it's, so there are some more of those moments. Then again, this is what I remember, but There's also, I think you'll enjoy, there's an appearance of the kid from Hunt for the Wilder People. He plays a pretty big role in the second Deadpool. And I know
I'm super stoked about it. Because I'm so stoked about the second film because you and I have been in such lockstep. I'm going to go into it now that I know the character, expecting that I'm going to enjoy it even more. I'm going to enjoy it even more. So I guess here we go.
Yeah.
This, by the way, everything about what we're doing today feels so strange because we've been recording these X-Men rewatch things without video, not on the main feed for so long now. And I'm realizing, no, we're doing like a main feed episode right now, but with X-Men characters. That's how close we are to Deadpool and Wolverine. This is the first time we're going to have a MCU main feed X-Men mashup. So, yeah. I'm getting really excited about just overall what this month could mean, not only seeing Deadpool 2, but also seeing Deadpool 3 now. Like, I fully am invested in the Hugh Jackman side of it from our rewatch journey. And now I'm starting to get invested in the Deadpool side of it. But most importantly for me, we'll talk about this more later, but fascinated to see how that fits with the MCU we know. Like, I totally get the irreverent vibe, but the actual logistical explanation of the TVA and the clashing of the worlds is going to be wild.
Yeah, I'm excited to see both like the plot elements there, but also like even whenever Deadpool first came out, I was already not super invested in the X-Men universe anymore, having really enjoyed Days of Future Past, but kind of like I think a lot of people viewing that as sort of the end of that whole chapter. And so it worked better for me now in this context, like I said earlier, but it makes me really excited to see a character like that play like in the MCU sandbox, because like there are so many references and so much that can be done. And I don't want it to be over the top, but I do think that it's like the sky's kind of the limit in terms of what they could do. And like a lot of the sort of inside jokes that I think we've made on this podcast as we've gone through the Infinity Saga and the more recent things, like I wonder how much of that, like as Kevin, you know, again, Zeb Wells is someone that is very, has worked on a lot of these things. Like Kevin Feige obviously is not, like they're not going to want to like throw a grenade in there and like take out all of these things that they put a lot of time towards. So I'm curious to see, in the same way we talked in a Plus episode recently about like which actors are willing to come in and kind of make fun of themselves. I wonder like which jokes have been cleared, like where Marvel Studios willing to poke fun at itself.
That's a great point. Like even the post-grad sequence, the joke about Nick Fury, like, is that the level, or are we going to go into like dark world, like crushing the dark elves or something, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah. That's like, those are all the things that gets me excited or that get me excited about that movie and kind of about Deadpool 2. Cause like I said, there's a lot more there.
The journey continues. We're on a pretty good run right now between Days of Future Past and Dark Phoenix and now Deadpool. The journey continues on Friends from Work Plus. We're going to be hitting up the New Mutants, which I'm not holding my breath for. And then Deadpool 2 here, and then soon Deadpool and Wolverine. I genuinely would love to have a discussion with all of you out there. So you know all the ways to do that. I'm on Discord. Hit me up. Otherwise, we'll see you next time, right? Deadpool 2 next week. Right back here. Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.